California.
What's up, everybody? Today is Tuesday, December 1st, 2020. This is A Talk in the Attic, and I'm your host, Kirk Ross. A big day here at Attic Audio Productions, because after a year of having my eye on it, and 9+ months of full-on production here, I finally bit the bullet and picked up a couple new microphones. But these aren't just any mics. They're Shure SM7Bs, the industry standard radio mic, and the same gear used by Joe Rogan and most other well-funded podcast hosts. What's great about the SM7B is that despite its position among the top choices for voice recording, it's still somewhat affordable. A few hundred bucks gets you professional equipment, while some companies offer microphones well into the thousands. This mic is the latest line in the Shure SM7 lineup, which rose to prominence when Quincy Jones produced the still revolutionary Thriller album by Michael Jackson, a figure whose reputation hasn't enjoyed the same trajectory as the microphone he sang into back then. The SM7B's greatest claim to fame, at least I think, is that it offers crazy frequency and volume response. In other words, I can scream like a drive-time morning show radio house without so much as a single byte of clipped or distorted audio. Don't believe me? Then I invite you to check out the latest in annoying radio shows. That's right, I'm of course talking about Dirty Curdy and the G-Town Interrupters.
106.1
The Jam.
Welcome back to 106.1 The Jam, the only station in Grand Rapids that offers more commercials than songs, and more sound effects than regular words.
Oh yeah!
Next up, a classic hit from a band that doesn't get enough credit, Hoobastank. Hit it, boys. Silly, I know, but I couldn't help it. Ever since this mic arrived on my doorstep yesterday, I've strutted around here like some sort of radio legend. Think Don Imus, but without the nappy-headed ho vernacular, or views for that matter. So for the past 24 hours, I've been thinking about how I can incorporate this newfound desire to act like a radio DJ into the show. I thought about doing a spoof of This American Life. The winters are cold in Grand Rapids, Michigan. There's a frigidness that almost never thaws. Try to imagine growing up in a place like this. A place that most never leave. I'm Kyrie Gross, and this is Frozen Town, Furniture City Melting, by NPR. I considered putting together some amalgam of Rush Limbaugh and Alex Jones for a conspiracy show spoof, but the Attic's very own conspiracy of lemurs already covers that segment of the show, so I scratched that. But there was one idea that kept circling around up here, until it became clear that I had to proceed with our very own Attic Advice Show, something in the vein of My Girl Delilah with a little bit of Dear Abby and just a little love line mixed in. I can already hear from the peanut gallery, "Who wants love advice from a now thrice married man-child?" To which I'll reply, "Well, first off, wow, that was really harsh. And secondly, I'll lean on a sports analogy to explain why I might be the perfect person to host a romantic and personal advice show. Let's look at Michael Jordan. Undeniably an all-time great basketball player, also notoriously impatient with incompetence. Just like he's not a good general manager, he'd make a terrible coach. How can somebody with so much skill and talent possibly explain his flawless technique to a bunch of non-Michael Jordans? Point is, failure creates teachable moments, and teachable moments create lessons. And lessons are the stuff of teachers and coaches, the stuff of life. The reality is, I've got some romantic baggage in my past. I used to be embarrassed by it, but that was just my ego being concerned about losing face. Now I look at those struggles as part of me, no better or worse than any other part of me, just part of me. So we're going to start the show, but from that point through the duration of this episode, I will cease to be Kirk Ross, just as this show will cease to be A Talk in the Attic. Before that happens, big up to the folks over at thestandingdesk.com. It's been a week since I assembled this bad boy, and I'm loving it so much. This is the cloud model, which I've got loaded up with my 49-key MIDI controller, two JBL studio monitors, my audio interface, my Mac, and a bunch of other gear. And despite 100 pounds worth of equipment on here, I can raise and lower the top with ease. I'm truly pleased with it. So please check out their website, thestandingdesk.com. There's a link in the show notes. While I'm handing out compliments, shout out to the Michigan Podcasting Network for their support. And also, as usual, thank you to Joe Gentleman for the theme song up top. We're actually working on a new theme song now for season 2. Joe and I are pumped to share that when it's ready. But enough administrative talk. let's get into this special episode, one we're going to call Love in the Attic with Dr. K. Let's start the show. Let's get physical.
Lagates, now it's time for me to give up. I feel it's time. Got a picture of you beside me. Got your lipstick marks still on your coffee cup. Got a fist of pure emotion. Got a head of shattered dreams. Gotta leave it all behind now. Whatever I said or whatever I didn't mean it. I just want you back for good. Want you back, want you back, want you back for good. Whenever I'm wrong, I just tell me the song and I'll sing it. You'll be right, understood. Said I want you back for good.
Welcome back to Love in the Attic. I'm your host, Dr. K. That was a cover of Back for Good by Take That, a song responsible for more teenage pregnancies in the 1990s than any other tune. I'm sending love and sexy vibes out to all of you in Loveland. It's a 10 p.m. hour, and you know what that means. It's about to get real sensual up in here. And with that, let's go to the phone lines. Love in the Attic, Dr. K speaking. With whom do I have the pleasure of speaking tonight?
Hey, Kirk, this is Terry from Flint. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for being a loyal listener, Terry from Flint. What's on your mind?
My question today is, how do I get past the rage I feel every single time I catch a dude checking out my wife's hot ass? All right, thanks a lot. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, great question, Terry. Here's what I'm gathering. You've got a hot new wife with a banging booty. And you've been catching other dudes peeping that booty. And that makes you mad, makes you see red even. But who are you mad at exactly? Your wife? Or is it the guy? Assuming it's the latter, you have to remind yourself that this guy is simply appreciating that very same backyard that you admire yourself. So in that regard, you're the same as the weirdo staring hard at your wife's rock-hard derriere. So you've got that in common. So think back to before you knew the name of the lovely woman who calls that picture-perfect peach of a rear end her very own, and think about how you might have snuck a few glances in yourself. And maybe that's why you're mad. Because you see yourself in these young bucks looking at your wife, and if you were able to seal the deal, then why can't they, right? Terry, your wife loves you. And you have to trust that all the ass staring in the world isn't going to change her feelings towards you. The key to this answer, as usual, is trust. Trust her. And trust that her booty, while it doesn't belong to you, is not for public consumption. But speaking of booty consumption, why don't you take that rage and turn it into some good old-fashioned analingus? Godspeed, Terry from Flint. Bon appetit, my friend. We've got another caller here, This is Love in the Attic. Dr. K speaking. What can I do for you?
Hi, Kurt. My name's Julie. I'm a first-time caller, and I have a burning question for you. I'm wondering what advice you would give to a newlywed whose husband wants to have sex way too much. Looking forward to your answer.
Julie, if I had a dollar for every time I heard this question, I'd at least be making some money from the podcast, right? So your new husband is a hornball, big whoop. Newsflash. Most dudes are. See, just as you were genetically programmed to be sexually selective and truly nurturing, your husband was programmed to be pelvic thrusting his way across the landscape, depositing the stuff of life into any receptacle within his visibility. Until you met and married him, he was on a fruitless search for someone, something really, anything even, that would accept him. Now he's found you. And because he's a good dude, he's no longer directing any of that wayward sexual attention anywhere except for you. The only thing happier than the two of you at your wedding was his sock drawer. Appreciate the fact that your man is interested in getting frisky with his new wife. You never know when he might lose his penis in a tragic ice fishing accident, and then he'll be of no use to you. So take advantage of that D while you still can, Julie. Because let's face it, winter is coming. And your man's is definitely a nice fishing type. I hope that helps, Jules. Next, I've got an email here from Jocelyn in Norton Shores who writes, "My best friend's boyfriend broke up with her because he said he likes me. After showing me a little interest, my friend got mad at me and said she doesn't like it and I shouldn't betray her friendship that way. I sort of understand, but did I mention we're in 7th grade? Wow. Until that final tidbit about being in 7th grade, I had a completely different answer in mind. But you're in middle school. In middle school is a time when you're still figuring things out. That's hard enough without a bunch of rules like, hey, Brody's off limits because one of your friends used to like him. I know I'm supposed to be the romance physician, Dr. K, but I need to revert back to my actual self for a moment so that I can tell you about an actual story from my actual life as Kirk Ross. It was June of 1997, our final day of 6th grade at Kramer Junior High in Essexville, Michigan. My friends, JJ, Michael, and I had been dating 3 girls, also friends. Technically, we called it going out back then, but it was really more like going nowhere. We had all been going out since the same day back in early spring when we each nervously uttered the most difficult words a 12-year-old boy can utter. Will you go out with me? They all agreed, and that was that. And all 3 of us had girlfriends, more specifically, girls who we avoided at all costs. But by the time the end of the school year had come around, the boys and I were ready for our freedom back. Enough of these balls and chains, fellas. Let's be free. So in a coordinated effort, in the waning hours of the last day of school, I dumped Michael's girlfriend on his behalf. Michael dumped my girlfriend on my behalf, leaving only JJ, who by happenstance was out sick on the final day of 6th grade. And without so much as a single word spoken to JJ about what he himself thought about our last day plan to get free for our big summer ahead, Michael and I went ahead and dumped JJ's girlfriend for him too. This was pre-cell phone. Pre-email, really. So when someone wasn't at school, he or she was completely out of the loop. We filled JJ in about his breakup the next time we hung out a few days later. JJ didn't seem to mind. In fact, he agreed with our unilateral decision to end his relationship with what might have been his future wife. Here's the point, Jocelyn from Norton Shores. Middle school is all about finding your way in this complex new scene. And after a few years, most of what happens now will have been forgotten. Now, that's not to say you should act like a fool or be mean or steal your friend's boyfriends, but it does mean that time will heal these wounds. JJ and Michael and Rachel and Megan and Jenna and I were all still friends all these years later. Jocelyn, if you like this boy, then you need to tell your friend with love and respect to pound sand. It reminds me of one of my all-time favorite songs by Flight of the Conchords in which the singer belts out, I asked Dave if he's gonna make a move on you. He's not sure. I said, Dave, do you mind if I do? He says he doesn't mind, but I can tell he kind of minds. But I'm gonna do it anyway. In other words, just ask your friend for permission. If that doesn't work, then simply ask for forgiveness after you land your new man. Best of luck, Jocelyn. I'm gonna go back to Dr. K now. We've got a voicemail here from Vincent in GR. Let's hear it.
Hey, Talking Addict. You know, I really like this girl, man. I just want to know, when do I make it official? Do we keep it friends? You know, 2020, it's weird. How do you make it happen?
Okay, thanks for calling in, Vincent. We're up against a song here, so I'm going to give you a quick response on this one, brother. And it's verbatim advice that I received from the great John Niemeyer of Essexville Lower back in the 3-way breakup days. John is quoted as saying, in situations like this, there's only 3 things to do. Think about it, smell it, and go after it. Think about it, smell it, and go after it. So I'll tell you the same thing here, Vince. You've already thought about her. You wouldn't have written to me. So now all you've got to do is smell it and go after it. The ball's in your court, my man. Might as well take your shot. Might as well take your inch. Now, as promised, here's the song that Kirk's mother, Diane Ross, once called sexy, marking the first such time he had ever heard that word from his mom, as well as the last time he ever heard the song without being a little grossed out. If it wasn't already a little weird, then how about a cover in which he himself is singing the same lyrics that Lady Di considered sexy? This is Love in the Attic. I'm Dr. K, and I'll be right back after this song.
I have never seen that dress you're wearing, or the highlights in your hair that catch your eye. I have been blind, lady in red. nobody here. It's just you and me. It's where I wanna be.
Wow. What a creepy and poorly sung rendition, if I may say so myself. Welcome back to Love in the Attic. I'm your host, Dr. K. I've got an Instagram message here from Mike Brock in Arizona, and it reads, "What are your tips for how to keep it spicy in the bedroom? How can I introduce new toys and moves without scaring my partner away?" Love this question, Mike. I've got a couple answers for you. First, you can never go wrong with bringing literally spicy foods into the bedroom. Peppers are an aphrodisiac of unparalleled proportion, and since it's fall right now, then there's no better time to cook yourself up a big old batch of chili to keep you filled up so that you can keep your partner filled up as well. Gross, I know. Second answer is a little bit less straightforward. I know Delilah would probably tell you to be honest and openly communicate with your mate when you're feeling like you need to mix things up in the sack, but this isn't Delilah. And Dr. K has a very different philosophy on such matters. Here's what you need to do. Next time it's that wonderful time of the week to make love, find yourself a life-size and lifelike male mannequin from the internet. Dress it up in a pair of cut-off jean shorts with a whale tail sticking out in back, maybe a tasteful pair of crotchless panties underneath that. Throw some lipstick on him, and then draw two big black X's over his eyes. And when it's go time later that night, bust your mannequin and his lifeless eyes out of the closet and inform your partner that you're in love with the mannequin and that you won't be sexually satisfied until he too becomes involved in every aspect of your relationship. This will undoubtedly freak her the F out. In order for this to work, she'll have to be freaked out, in fact. You need to nurture her fears. Let her get to the brink of leaving you for good when you drop the news that you were only joking. You have no lustful intentions with Sam, the passenger seat safety companion. At that point, she'll be so relieved that you're not into mannequin-based necrophilia that she'll be down to try literally anything else. And that, Mike Brock, from Arizona, is when you bust out that spicy pot of chili and any other implements of filth you so choose. You're welcome. Let me know how this all works out. Wow, would you look at that, listeners? It's already midnight, which means I've got a date with a piping hot bowl of jambalaya and a number of concubines I keep here in the studio. This was Love in the Attic. I'm Dr. K, reminding you that when your love life's in doubt, make it weird. Here's one last cover from your host, Kirk Ross, this time a pitchy rendition of Dead Sea by Lumineers. Good night, y'all. Make it a sexy one. Peace out.
Your father died and you decided to live for yourself. You fell. You just felt it was time. And I'm glad, 'cause you with cats, that's just not right. Whoa, like the Dead Sea. You told me I was like the Dead Sea. You never sing when you are with me. Oh Lord, you're my Dead Sea. Said to me, oh honey, can't you see that well, I was born to be your Dead Sea. I've been down, I've been defeated. You're the message I will heed it. But would you stay? But would you stay the night? Ooh. Dead Sea. You told me I was like the Dead Sea. Never sink when you are with me. Oh Lord, I'm your Dead Sea. Whoa, I'm like a Dead Sea. The nicest words you ever said to me. Oh, honey, can't you see that I was born to be be your Dead Sea.